This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me, Kusu Chuang.
Good morning, Mr. Kutan.
Good morning, Mr. Koo. Are they famous, the Koos of Penang, aren't
Actually,
they?
Actually, we are. We are very famous.
There's that, of course, beautiful building, the Koo Kongsi.
We are beautiful people, too, as well.
I don't know about that, but that the architecture of that mansion, the Blue Mansion in...
Nothing to do with the Koos, though, by the way.
It's called the Koo Kongsi.
It's called the Blue Mansion. It's called the Cheung Fat Tsi.
Oh, it's called the Cheung Fat Tsi. Oh, so it's the Cheungs that the people who really are beautiful. Okay, moving right along.
Sometimes.
Sorry, misattribution, as they call it. Misattribution.
Misattribution.
Okay. What we can't, we won't misattribute is the exciting lineup that we have this morning. I know you've tried to...
Your segues are so bad sometimes, Sharad.
I know, the segues. Well, you know, try to do better, Chuang, yourself. Okay, so
can do better,
What is another word for exciting lineup? What kind of expression would you use? I know you've used titillating, but actually it has a connotation that I think is inappropriate for a family-orientated radio show. And in fact, it's not even true, and it would be misrepresentation.
There's a new tech term called not for NFWS or something, not for... What is it? NFSW. Not for work or something.
Oh, not for work?
Yeah, NFWS or something. It's true. It's true.
This is all about work. In fact, what we try to do in the morning show is to prepare you for your working day.
We try and work in the morning.
Yeah, we try to demonstrate that it's so good to get up in the morning and march off to the office because you could learn so much.
Actually, do you know what, Gerard, you love. I spend a lot of time on YouTube, and there's a new video called, and there's a new channel, there's a channel called The Art of Manliness, right? And the latest video that's popped up on my channel is The Art of Manliness, waking up early in the morning. And apparently that's a very manly thing to do. It is.
Waking up early in the morning.
It is, yeah. I'm serious.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, I think it's also a lot of women get up very early in the morning, and I don't think it's got to do with masculinity. But why would they make The Art of Manliness,
basket? It's clickbait, I think, because, you know, you bound out bed in the morning, you get yourself, you know, you drag a... To the breath.
You know, I thought you would. I hope you do more than drag it across your mouth. I mean, why would you, of all people, you know, the very paragon of manliness,
need
to even refer to a YouTube video of the
Art
said
of manliness.
Name?
I don't know.
I'm opening it. Oh, I see.
It's
kind of funky.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's got all kinds of topics relevant to men.
It does, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to check this out. We can even tweet it out if we like.
The art of manliness.
Or the art of being an adult, I think, which is more to the
actually,
point.
Actually, you and I, Sharad, we're nearly 100 years old combined. And actually, most of the time, we're very childish.
I don't think so.
I speak in the collective turn of phrase, but...
Okay. Now, yes. The lineup includes exciting otherwise, because that's something for you... to judge when you listen to us this morning. You tell us whether it's been an exciting lineup for you, and we'll tweak our programming just for you. Now, on the Breakfast Grill this morning, we have Rita Benoit-Bouchon. She is CEO of the Minority Shareholders Watchdog, or MSWG. And Julian Ng, that is going to be interviewing her. She recently stepped down from her position, having headed this kind of interest group for a number of years, and really staking out very important positions with regard to minority shareholders' rights in the world of sort of equities and stocks. Right?
You sound very intelligent when you talk like that, Sharad.
I know, I slow down too.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
My brain tries to process all that information.
So she is in a position which actually is quite unpopular, because, you know, you've got to stand up for the little guy against the big guy. And, you know, in the corporate world, the big guy dominates. You're up there. You know, you've got to stand up for what is known as corporate governance issues. You've got to stand up for things like transgressions. And basically, you know, it's all the big boys that are, in a way, and the corporations and the big GLCs, they're the ones that are always overstepping the boundaries. Not necessarily GLCs, but sometimes the mid-cap, small-cap companies as well, in terms of maybe, you know, people who own their own companies, and then they do a lot of transactions with their family members, or they use public funds because, you know, public listed companies, they use public shareholder funds to enter the transaction, to buy stuff, which might not be good for the company, but it's good for their own personal P&L. So
right. Okay.
It's quite a... it's quite an unpopular post because you've got to be quite brave, you've got to be quite direct, you've got to be very vocal.
And she's been subject to several suits, hasn't she? Or the group has?
Well, she has been up against it, against several individuals through the years. I mean, Syed Mokhtar with MMC, you know, obviously the public banks. I think public bank, definitely with Lee Kim Yew of Country Heights as well, you know.
So
you've got to stand up. You've got to be very vocal. You've got to use the media. And yeah.
Okay. There are two things I understand coming out of this particular issue. One is that there are different models for minority shareholder group, kind of representation. In Malaysia, the minority shareholder watchdog is actually set up by government. In other countries, it's set up by a consortium of minority shareholders. Is that the two prevailing models?
Well, kind of. Malaysia is structured that way because you've got, you know, the general oversight bodies like the RC and Bursa being the frontline regulators. And then you've got people like the MSWG, the MICG as well, which is in the picture, the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance. Then you've also got the Malaysian Investor Relations Association, which is known as MIRA. But I think the MSWG is one of the more vocal ones and certainly one of the better staffed ones. And they are funded by the CMDF, which is the Capital Market Development Fund.
Right. I understand Rita actually has her background in
EPF.
So a government statutory body. So there she is, kind of EPF is. Oh, you wouldn't call her a civil servant, would you? Or would you call her a kind of? She was a member of. It's a government body,
see,
right?
It's a definition thing because we are talking about the civil service being bloated. So do you count the EPF? Because if you do, then you've got another couple of million. Well, not a couple of million, but quite a few people there.
Doing good work. So
they're doing very good work.
So the charge of bloatedness, and I always think of bloated ankles.
The issue of bloatedness is in today's age because we all, you know, it's all about government spending now. But just to go back to the point. She's come from the EPF fold. I think she was former head of research there or something, fund management.
Yeah, and research is a big part of what the MSWG does, doesn't it?
Because you've got to know what you're doing. You've got to go into the books. You've got to see where the lines are being crossed. And then what they do is they buy small stakes in companies, and they've got about 300 companies or 350 or 400 companies in their portfolios. And they just buy, 100 shares, just enough to get them invited to the AGMs, to the shareholders' meetings. And that's where they make their grouses known.
Okay, so I'm looking forward to that because it seems like it's a very important,
dimension
of, sort of corporate governance. You're having the small guy out there,
And
giving them the voice. Absolutely. Also, on current affairs today, we have Esther Lai. She's the head of sovereign ratings at RAM Rating Services. And she gives us her view of a budget 2017. So.
Wow, a bit overkill, really, lah. What are we, Wednesday now, don't you think?
I don't think I budget
up to my eyeballs now, man.
Well, honestly, I think the budget's so important, and but it's like this. I ask people, right? So I ask taxi drivers, for instance, ask them, did you watch the budget?
And what do they say?
Well, one person said to me, she's my regular taxi to work in the morning, and she said, yeah, it all sounds nice, but. Is it real? And I think that was her question.
Correct.
This guy I asked yesterday on the way back from the supermarket, he was kind of like, yeah, I watched it, but not sure entirely what it really means for him. He said he used to be quite politically active. He was a member of a major political party in this country. But he says he's so turned off from politics that that he's decided that he's just going to try to keep his head above water. So it's interesting how people view all this this spectacle of governance that we have, and because the budget is an annual spectacle. That sometimes is undermined by what happens mid-year through the fiscal year, which is, the supplementary budgets. Then that government hasn't been keeping to, what it planned to do, and often is overspending. And we don't really know, how it's doing that. And in fact, our current affairs show yesterday with Sungai Siput MP Michael Jayakumar was very interesting because he talked about the most important thing.
We spend way too much time on the budget. In the sense of what the government will spend on and what it will save money on, but there isn't nearly enough. And in fact, there's no end of year assessments of how the government did. And everybody tries to keep to their own personal P&Ls and their personal budgets, and we almost always break them. And in the government's case, they always or they've broken them every year since the late 90s.
Well, even if they don't...
In terms of going back to Parliament for a supplementary budget.
Absolutely. The supplementary budget issue, and we, I think over a year ago, interviewed Noor Jazlan Mohammed, who is Pulai MP, and also he was then head of the Public Accounts Committee. We talked to him on the show about the supplementary budget, what it really means. And he's an accountant by training. So, I mean, he understands the numbers. And I... You know, but beyond the numbers, I think, Chuang, it's not just about how government spends, but what is government trying to achieve by spending money in particular, segments of the economy?
Simple. It's very simple. And the last few years, and in terms of the budget, it's been very simple. What the intentions behind the budget, which is to make everybody happy, as broad a swath of the population as is necessary.
Well, but the deputy
necessary to get their endorsement, essentially.
Well, yeah, but you can please, the question, I guess, at the end of the day is, do you want government just wanting to appease people? Do you want, say, if in a situation like Singapore, where the government is fairly insulated from popular pressure, to establish policies that have a long-term, and hopefully positive effects,
right? I'll give you an example, right? As opposed to spending, say, 6 or 7 billion ringgit on BRIM, which is, I think, necessary because the economy is in quite a tough situation now. But you can use a lot of the money which has otherwise gone into unproductive means to invest for the future, such as in innovation, research and development, technology, digitization, etc., which is kind of like forsaken for the short term because you have to appease a lot of the stakeholders, quote unquote.
Yeah, your vote bank.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and this is why the conversation in some ways needs to happen and needs to be extended, because as soon as we kind of turn it into just part of the news cycle, we're going to start missing things, because then we allow government to go off and do precisely what it wants rather than, as citizens, really kind of establish that, we
have
a
budget. Do you have a certain amount of money that you need to adhere by?
I must admit, my own personal finances are not a shambles, but they...
somewhat resembling a shambles.
No, it operates more like a black box in which magic happens.
That's a bit like government finances, actually.
Do you think so?
I think so.
I don't know. I think
there's an asymmetry between what we know about public finances and what are actually in the public finances.
Well, these days I actually open the letters that come to me from the bank, unlike the past.
Yes.
When it was a bit of a terrifying moment. It's like, oh no, letter from the bank.
I think most people would be in that situation, right? They never look upon like a letter. Like, one of those white envelopes with a window on them? They think, oh my God, how much do I owe to who now, right?
Yeah. The other thing, of course, is, and we're coming up to the end of the month, is the number of people who really live paycheck to paycheck. And, delay.
Absolutely.
It really...
Any delay in your salary,
hell and, breaks loose when there's a delay in payment. I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
And because people are living,
paycheck to paycheck.
And that's very disturbing because, of course, you really should be working towards having... and I'm talking about EPF because that's... Not when you're young.
It's like the MC Hammer song, Can't Touch It.
Absolutely. Take us back to the early 80s.
My pop culture is so outdated, man.
No, I think it's just you.
It's just
you,
me.
You are outdated. Okay, we're going to come back with more after this. I do think that the conversation about what government is and ought to do is something we should... it's a conversation we continue to need to have. I don't think there's enough diversity. I know there are groups out there like Ideas that are trying to push back on this, they're taking the kind of liberal position that small government is better, but that I don't think is a popular notion. I don't think any party on the political spectrum can really push that agenda because that seems like a vote loser.
I think there should be something we in the media can do. And in fact, something just popped into my head, Sharon, which I'm going to discuss with you offline. And then if you think it's a good idea, we're going to tell our listeners in 15 minutes.
Okay. And we're going to be coming back with more on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Going to California by Led Zeppelin. A very mellow number.
Very dreamy, that song.
Very
sure.
dreamy, yeah? For a kind of like a head
quite
banging.
Quite ephemeral, do you know what I mean? It's like wispy.
wispy. Like your mustache, wispy.
Yeah, okay. Like a Chinese mustache. Three
but,
hairs.
You know, there are a lot of hirsute Chinese hirsute, men out there.
Yes, yes. Michael Gong being one of them. Actually, yeah. You're not bad. You can.
Yeah, but I'm not Chinese, so I fall out of that little category.
Indian fellows have a lot of hair.
Well, some of them. Yeah, some of them. Maybe a little more than the national average. Okay, yeah. You're listening to The Morning Run. You might be actually mistaken thinking you're listening to some really
odd. Ooh, it's awake at 6:20 in the morning. Actually, Sharon, you know,
there are a lot of people awake and going to school and taking their kids to school and heading out of work before the rush hour.
But unless you've got a transistor radio, shit, get the concept. In the house, you're not going to be listening to the radio. It's only when you're in the
radio,
car.
Transistor radio. Transistor, you can listen radio, to it on your tranny, phone.
What they used to call the tranny.
Okay, so that odd phrase, voice that is Kusu Chuang, and I'm Sharad Kutin. Going to California? Well, apparently, we should all be heading to Pera because...
I saw that and I thought, how ridiculous.
No, it's not. Well, don't dump on it so early. Give it a chance. Now, okay, so Lonely Planet has chosen Pera as one of the world's top 10 regions for next year in Lonely Planet's Best in Travel 2017. Lonely Planet, of course, started off as this single guide, it was the imprint of somebody called Tony Wheeler, and I think he started
Maureen
with
was his wife, actually.
And Maureen,
I bought the book, got the t-shirt.
Yeah, Shoestring Guide to Southeast Asia. And it was great because it was for the budget traveler, it was for the kind of backpacker, and I, you know, Chuang?
Yes?
I almost met Tony Wheeler in Chiang Mai all those years ago, the mid-80s,
really?
When I was backpacking with my friends, and we went to a museum in Chiang Mai, and there Tony Wheeler had been there because he had put his name down on the guest book that the museum had. Yeah, so, but you know, it was such a Bible. Then it's become
okay, let me ask you a question, Asharad. You know how you've got these listicles, like the three people that you would most like to have a game of golf with or have lunch with, right?
Yeah.
Would Tony Wheeler make the list?
No.
No.
No, I mean, you know.
I just outed you, Sharad. So who would be the top three?
Oh, there are just so many people. I don't even know where to begin.
Would Gandhi be one of them?
Who?
Gandhi.
Well, I think he's still dead.
What?
History?
Conceptually, la. Hello.
Oh, in history. Wow. I don't even know where to begin. Mao Zedong.
Why?
Well, partly because I think he embodies the history of the 20th century and the real struggles,
That's
right?
That's on the assumption he can actually speak English.
Well, I mean, if we can raise somebody from the dead and have him speak English. Yeah. No, just get me a translated drug. Okay. No, coming back to Pera, I want to come back to Pera because I think it's important. So this is what Lonely Planet says. Pera's capital, Ipoh, is nurturing a bloom of vintage-style cafes and boutiques. And the nucleus of this old meets new makeover is Kong Heng Block, surrounding the imaginative Sikaping Kong Heng Hotel. Here, cheerful joints like Rocket Cafe, Burps and Giggles, Bits and Bobs pull a vibrant crowd to shop, dawdle, and slurp ice kapal. In this historic neighborhood. Now, okay, so you know what I'm trying to say. I started right through. No, it's kind of like a hipster central, right? And what's interesting about Ipoh is that in some ways it's copied Penang's really successful model. It's got the murals going, it's got the hipster cafes going, without the heritage
you
status.
You go to the Georgetown Festival in Georgetown
every
don't
year.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I go to the Georgetown Festival. I also often play moderator at the Georgetown Literary Festival.
Can you invite me this year? Because
you don't need an invitation. There's an open invitation.
Really?
Because
I write, you know, I'm kind of like a journalist kind of person, and then I've never been to the Georgetown Festival.
Okay, you can enter, you know, you can go to the Literary Festival as a spectator. Or you mean like be invited to?
I want to be like an important person, Sharad, you know what I mean?
Have you got a book?
Have I got a book?
Have you published
a
book? No, have you published a book?
I write a lot of columns.
Have you compiled them as a book?
No,
you haven't. Now, okay, let's get back to Pera. Can we just focus on Pera for a second? It's good news for Malaysia, along with good news that...
Can I just say, these Lonely Planet things, they do for leisure and travel and holidays and tourism what a good analyst report does for a company. They originate, they come up with ideas, and then they promote it, and then as you know, and then magic happens. People go to that place, or people buy the stock. I'm not sure outside of that Konghang blog how much Ipoh has got to offer. I mean, it's got great food, some good geography.
Yeah, it's got some nice scenery, and I think it's probably worth exploring. I mean, I don't know how many of us take the time out to explore the Ipoh peninsula, quite especially nice. Us living in the Klang Valley. You know, it's just so. Yeah.
Because once you've done JBKL Penang, then you've got to look a bit, you know.
Well, you know, I'm from JB, and I must say that JB isn't as pretty as I remember it.
But then you've got the whole Iskandar thing and Legoland and all
yeah.
that, right?
Well, yeah, and I've been to that. I mean, no. I've not been inside Legoland because clearly I'm not their demographic. And
I've been. I think it's great.
Well, because you've got kids.
I'm very childish as well.
No, you've got kids.
I've got kids,
You've got kids. Okay, yeah. Other good news for Malaysia is that the Malaysian team in dodgeball is ranked number one. Number one
no kidding.
The world. Yeah. And it defeated the Canadian team at a gold medal match 6-5.
I don't know. Oh, this is the girls' team as well, Sharad.
And it is girls. So, you know, our women rock. In fact, our women's sports, our sportswomen have been doing so well of
really?
Late. Yeah. This is the World Dodgeball Federation. It's the fifth World Dodgeball Championships, and it was held in Melbourne, Australia. I believe the team arrived early this morning. I don't know if there were fans there, but, you know, some of the kind of silver linings for the Malaysian story has been in sports. We did so well at the Paralympics, and now, you know, we had dodgeball. We also had a recent
thereby wing. Joining the ranks of, you know, other top-ranked events like a government corruption and white-collar crime.
Oh, you had to go there. You see, you know, don't bring us down yet. It's only 6:27 in the morning.
Why don't we become world number one in, like, you know, golf? Or like
public
corporate
health.
Governance or public health.
Well,
or
you'd have to beat Cuba for that one.
Really? Public health?
Well, Cuba's public health is pretty good.
Really?
So, yeah, and of course, you know, Cuba also sends health professionals around the world as well.
No kidding.
Health. Yeah. Wow. So, Cuba, and you know, it was the subject of Michael Moore's
really?
Yeah, documentary called Sicko, right, where he compares America's health system with the Cuban's health system. Because Cuba has been that little guy, you know, off the coast of
Isn't
the great America.
Isn't it decidedly B-side in terms of, you know, a lot of the stuff that...
Well, it's run by the Communist Party, yes.
Yeah.
So it's B-side, but it's doing very well in some respects. And others not so, including human rights. So, you know, there are issues there. But coming back to the question of Perak, okay, if you read one of those listicles, I mean, clearly this is one of these listicles, and I can look at some of the other stories, the other cities that are being mentioned. But would you think, this should be part of my bucket list or places I go to?
Bucket list no la. I mean,
bucket list is what you want to do before you die, right? Okay.
It's a nice day trip. You know, it's a good thing. You know, a couple of days, one night. You can actually take a train. Have you ever taken a train to Ipoh? It's great. It's great.
Yes,
fun.
I have. I've taken that electric train. In fact, I've taken the electric train all the way to Penang.
Yeah.
It's a great ride. It's 4 hours. It's very smooth. And
Fantastic, isn't it?
And it does. You know, I think it's a broad gauge for that train. So
yeah,
what happens?
Yeah.
You don't. It doesn't shake as much.
Yeah.
And it's.
It actually says what it. It actually does what it says on the tin, which is amazing, which is quite unrare.
And you know and the toilets are huge. You could host a family party
in there. To me,
unlike
that is
the
a
old,
deal maker. That to me is a deal maker. Sure.
You remember the old trains, KTM trains, and the toilets are so small.
Yeah,
you gotta squeeze
you
in.
Make a huge mess.
You don't make a huge mess because you're an adult and this is a family show. That's why you don't make it. So there are all kinds
of... You don't
other...
have to mention that, Sean. Come on.
Okay, the Azores in Portugal, Taranaki in New Zealand. I'm just going to name a few things so we
just
get our mind
it,
off
right?
your mess that you know, you want to make in a KTM, you know, train. Anyway, so we have... we're going to have more exciting conversation after this, but it's time now for our first bulletin, and it's coming up. And, at the mic is Keith Kum. And... of course, he's with BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I can't get next to you by the Temptations. Yeah, I feel like one of those DJs.
Yeah,
when I say things like that.
In fact, you are, Sharad, now that you're in the position.
No, I think we're called RJs.
We're called broadcast journalists.
We call radio journalists in the industry.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that was Kusi Chuang. I'm Sharad Kutin, and unseen and unheard,
Timothy Kang.
Timothy Kang, that's right.
Until now.
Singer-songwriter waiting to burst forth onto the world stage. You're listening to The Morning Run on steroids. Now, in the news, and I want to mention this because I know we're a family show, but I think it's worth mentioning.
Are we a family show, Sharad?
We are a family radio show,
like
I think.
A thinking well, professional a, show, aren't we?
That's true. I mean, you know, but kids might be in the car, and yes, we had to be mindful yes of that. Now, kids, hold your ears, because there's some terrible news out there, and that has to do with murders. Two murder cases that are really rocking the world, kind of grabbing headlines. One, of course, is that banker in Hong Kong who murdered two Indonesian women in a very brutal way. Yeah, yeah, he's a banker, and I think that makes all the difference in this story. He actually recorded all his murders, but he's pleaded not guilty because he says that because of the drug taking, he's putting it down to diminished responsibility as a result of the chemicals. So that's that story, and that's actually been big. And I don't know, it's because he's a British banker living in Hong Kong, you know, and having preyed on two Indonesian women. I think that globalized story is kind
correct
of interesting.
It's kind of story which transgresses boundaries.
Absolutely.
It grips the British, it grips the Chinese, it grips the Asians.
That's right. So it's trans. A bit of, and again, you know, we've had in Malaysian history a lot of murder cases that have gripped the nation in the sense that there are murders and murders, you know. Almost every day there's a murder, but the issue is really the murders that become so important is that, you know, the murder of that individual from the Attorney General's chambers, remember, who was murdered and found in a cement barrel. You remember that story?
That's right. Kevin Marias.
Yeah. Have we forgotten the Kevin Marias story? Also, Altan Tuya, that was a big murder story, and that's rocked the headlines. And then I think it was like the 10th anniversary of her death last week.
That's right.
Also, in Canada, in Ontario, a nurse also charged with 8 counts of first-degree murders but there it was less brutal, though no less criminal, and she used drugs to kill the long-term patients under her care. And it reminds me, if you look at the pictures of her, you might remember the actress Bates. I think, is it Susie Bates?
Kathy Bates.
In Misery.
One of the Stephen King novels.
Yeah.
Misery? Yeah, yeah. Misery.
Stephen Kahn. Remember that? So creepy. Because it's made up of... She looks so ordinary and plain, but the malevolence is amazing.
That's right.
Yeah, so there you have it. Anyway, murders. Two murders that are making headlines globally. Now, you know, Chuang, I wanted to pose this question to you because we always talk about government, you know, in the morning show during the morning run, because we're interested in corporate governance, but we're also interested in how government runs.
Well, public administration, namely.
Yeah. And, you know, we're often behind that discussion unsaid assumptions about what government ought to do, its role. In Malaysia, government is big, but government's all pervasive. The consensus seems to be that government has a role in social engineering, and we voluntarily give government the power to shape our lives, not just on a national level, but in some ways we even allow them into our bedrooms.
Did you know that Malaysia has one of the highest power distance ratios in the world, otherwise known as the Hofstede power distance index?
What does that demonstrate?
It shows that people in Malaysia are very, very receptive to authority, to seniority, to people in positions of power. So even if you have a direct boss, he or she is unimpeachable, beyond reproach, invincible almost.
And so you think of Southeast Asia, right? Malaysia would not be unique.
We had strong men. It's a cultural thing.
Yeah. So is it a culture in the sense that it's hardwired and we can't change it? Or is it culture established through a particular kind of history?
It's a combination of all the above.
Right.
Because we also perpetuated. Because we make
perpetuated?
It perpetuated? Perpetuated?
You sound like Tweety Bird.
Thank you.
And I want
But you know, we amplify this distance, you know,
yeah,
because of the mores. Is that how you say it? Yeah, the social mores.
Yeah, social mores. Yeah. Mores. Yeah. Yeah. But the important thing I think is, are we having a conversation sufficiently? Are we having a conversation about the role of government? I know that groups like IDEAS, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, and they try to push the liberal agenda on small government, and you know, and maybe disciplined governance, you know, but I don't know how widespread that is, and I don't know what it is that Malaysians would give up along with this shrinking of government.
Well, it's a very successful platform in the Scandinavian countries. When you look at the size of the parliaments and the number of ministers and junior ministers in the Scandinavian countries, they are minuscule compared to like Malaysia.
But the Scandinavian countries, you know, generally social democratic in nature. Well, do have, in fact, big government.
I think there's a direct correlation between that administration size and how it's run and the Hofstad power distance ratio. Because when you look at the Swedish and the Norwegians, for example, they've got the smallest power distance ratios.
But they also have a big role for government. I mean, taxes are very high and the kind of social safety net.
You take it as a given because what you get in return is a fantastic public transport, fantastic education, fantastic governance model.
Healthcare.
Cabinet ministers don't sit in a cavalcade with six escorts to work. They take the tube to work, the train to
work. Absolutely. I think, and that would be really healthy, I think, just because, you know, if you're designing a public transport system,
you ought to be seen.
You ought to be using it.
You ought to be using it. I can't see any cabinet minister taking the MRT to work.
Well, I don't know, you know, how many of us would ourselves,
I would.
You know? Well, you know,
well, for sure.
With our public transport system in the way it is. I mean, I'm one of the few people at BFM that actually doesn't own a car. By the way,
well, actually, now in this day and age, you don't actually have to own a car anymore. You can rent it, you can Uber it, you can Grab it, whatever.
Okay, the thing, anyway. I mean, one of the you know, individuals who's been in some of these, you know, like on Bloomberg recently, and I just because I was watching it, is a guy called Chamath Palihapitiya, and because from his name, you might be intrigued by his name. He's Sri Lankan born, moved to Canada when he was 6 years old, became part of the Facebook team, made his millions, now runs a investment firm called Social Capital. And he's very interesting because he came out against Peter Thiel for supporting Donald Trump. But when I dig deeper into his history or the kind of
his
positions,
ideals,
he's very against government. I mean, he's really for small government. In fact, he said on record of the U.S. government, it's completely useless. And he says that
I like this guy already.
Well, okay, but you know, it's self-serving, right? Because if you're a big capitalist
business, if you're entrepreneurial in spirit, you want as little regulation as possible. You want as little restriction as possible. And I'll be very honest with you, governments and business and, you know, governments and lawyers and people that constrict business, I mean, we hate them.
Okay, can I just quote him? He says, if the government shuts down, nothing happens and we all move on because it just doesn't matter. Stasis in the government is actually good for all of us. It means they can neither do anything semi-useful nor anything really stupid.
I would actually take it a step further, and I would actually say that governments in their current incarnation are actually injurious and damaging to business. I'll give you an example, right? 2008, the US government did not know what to do with the financial crisis when it exploded. AIG needed to be bailed out. Lehman Brothers had just collapsed. And you know who they turned to? They turned to an academic called Ben Bernanke, who decided to throw $85 billion US dollars at the program. And, you know, 8 years later, the US government is now $19.5 trillion in debt. They do not know what to do. Period.
So, but do capitalist individual businessmen know any better? I mean, how? Or would you just leave it up to the anarchy of the market?
Life goes on.
And this is what, you know, some people are saying, some commentators are saying, there's a kind of anarchist strain to the perceptions of government in Silicon Valley. So the consensus in Silicon Valley among all these guys who are leading Silicon Valley and, you know, is that, oh, just keep it anarchic, well, the marketplace
public administration is no different from a commercial conundrum. You take it, you look at it, you realize the inefficiencies, you realize the upsides, and then you go and address it. And that's what business will do. I like this guy because he makes a lot of sense.
Well, I don't know. I think it's, again, I think it's self-serving. There are a lot of people that need to be helped. Not in the way of protected, but they definitely need to be helped.
Well, because social, I mean, he runs, I don't know this guy from Adam, right?
So
he runs a firm called Social Capital. I presume there's a certain reciprocity to his ideals.
Well, I don't know. And so this is where you need to kind of dig deeper, right? So would he be sympathetic to the social democratic model of the Scandinavian countries that you extol just now? I'm not quite sure. But by the way, have you read this brilliant book by Tony Judd called Ill Fares the Land?
Well, the only Judd I know is the Ashley, the Ashley. Rather attractive actress.
No, this is J-U-D-T, I believe. And we're going to tweet out the link to Tony Judd's book because he makes an argument for social democracy. Sharing the burden is basically the ethos of social democracy. Everybody, when everybody can win in a game, everybody's committed to that game.
Well, exactly. This principle of mutuality.
But then sometimes you need a mediating institution like government to keep everybody in the game.
That's why the world is in so much trouble now, Sharad. We think that government is omnipotent, it can solve all our problems, and we don't do anything ourselves.
No,
it's very, very bad.
You might admit that, it's not the best tool that we have, but it's the only tool, and the anarchy of the marketplace might not be, the savior that you say it is. Will it? And this conversation.
And in fact, if you let the business people come in and take control, then there's only one winner, which is themselves. So, I mean, it's going to be no different eventually than the government and their people taking control, right?
Well, I don't know. You like the Scandinavian governments.
I do.
Okay, you do. Okay, well, coming up next is news. But first, here's Oasis and She's Electric, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.